Hey, Sister Brunch family, welcome back to another episode of the Sister Brunch podcast, where we share the stories of Black women and gender expansive people thriving in entertainment and media. We so appreciate you being here for another season with us and for all the ways that you uplift us and our guests. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast. Sign up for our monthly newsletter on our website, sisterbrunch.com, which actually is monthly, but we'll also be releasing it weekly during the regular season. That's how you can also follow all of these exciting updates that we have for you, like Sister Brunch going to the Sundance Film Festival, where we will cover all the films by and about Black women and gender expansive people. We're returning to Essence this year. We're partnering with Black Girls Film Camp this season and sharing our shows with their alumni co-hosts for a few of our episodes. Lots of amazing things are happening, and we are so grateful to you, our listeners, for listening and sharing, reviewing, and finding ways to support us and our guests. And that brings me to today's guest, who is dedicated to supporting Black filmmakers and all the work that they do. Our guest is Haria Muhammad. She is a powerhouse in the world of independent filmmaking. She's celebrated for her role as the co-founder and former executive director of the Black TV and Film Collective. You got to follow their work if you're not doing it already. I mean, what are you doing listening to Sister Brunch and not being part of the Black TV and Film Collective? She's a mentor. She's a workshop leader. She leads workshops on pretty much every aspect of filmmaking. She really is an expert in all. She's done a lot. And so she's got all this knowledge that she shares. She launched the Black Producers Fellowship, which grants $25,000 awards towards enhancing the work of Black producers. She also won the Sundance Creative Producing Award in 2020 for the narrative feature Farewell Amour by director Ekwa Imsangi. I can't wait to talk about that a little later, but I have to just plant a seed that one of our show creators, Christabel Nsiabwati, also our executive producer for seasons 1 through 3, recently had Ekwa Imsangi on her podcast, The Cipher, to talk about Farewell Amour. She got to see it. I'm jealous because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to make sure I see it. And now let's welcome our lovely guest, Haria Muhammad.
Wow. Thank you. That was such an amazing introduction. And you used the word powerhouse.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm always like, how do I describe this person in one word? And I felt like it was perfect for you. Yeah, absolutely. So we love to ask our guests to take us as far back as they would like. Could be your birth, if you want to go that far, your parents, birth, your grandparents, as far back as you would like, to share with us the journey of how you got to being the powerhouse that you are.
Interesting. Well, it all started in a land far, far away.
I love it. I'm ready.
No, I'm a native of Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland in the house. And I am a baby girl in a family of 8 children. Wow. You know, this whole thing about birth order is like, I really think it's true, because for me, being the baby, it really protected me. And in that protection, it gave me a sense of security to go out and explore and just kind of take on the world as I saw. You know, yes. Fit. And so I got into this industry after a failed career as a novelist. I always wanted to write the great American novel.
Okay.
But I was never disciplined enough to actually do it. I would get like 100 pages in and I would lose interest in that particular story and those particular characters. And I would be on to the next one. And then I was watching this really amazing show that I'm sure you know called Girlfriends. And yeah, everybody loves Girlfriends, right?
We've had Kelly Edwards on, I think 3 times, who was one of the development executives that helped create the show. Yes, yes, we love it.
I love Kelly. Yeah, she gave me some advice a few years ago that always stuck with me. So when you say powerhouse, that's a power.
She is, and you are too. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, I receive it today.
Good.
And so I was watching Girlfriends and I was like, you know, somebody's writing this. I can write this. And yes. I had never really considered screenwriting or, you know, entertainment media. At no time did it ever enter my brain to say, this is actually a career that I could pursue until I was watching that show and I realized that, hey, why don't I try my kind of hand as a screenwriter? And I found that it was right in line with my stamina as a writer because it's about 120 pages and it's not even a whole page. It's like the middle of the page, you know? And so, and I was really good at it, you know? And I took a couple of classes and I said, you know what? I'm going to move to Los Angeles and I'm going to become a screenwriter.
Wow.
I didn't know anybody in LA. I didn't know where I was going to live. I didn't know where I was going to work. I had never been to LA before, but I knew that I was too young to be doing something that I was not passionate about. At the time, I was working in advertising and I was really good at it. I was an account supervisor managing like campaigns, advertising campaigns.
Okay. And we should also mention, just to go back a little bit, that you studied computer science at Spelman. Is that right?
Yes, Spelman in the house.
I love it. I love it. I think you might, I can't believe this, but I think we've had Howard grads, but I'm like, is this our first? This can't be our first Spelman grad. Now I'm going to feel bad that I said that because I know we'll go back and see them. But I did want to point out that you studied computer science. You were going to be a novelist. And you were in advertising. And I just love when our guests have these kind of varied backgrounds and that we can see how they came together to make sense that you ended up. So I'm curious if computer science, and certainly having gone to Spelman, if that also affected part of this journey at all.
You know, it's so interesting because I remember one time I was having a conversation with my baby brother, because I'm actually not the youngest child. I have a baby brother.
Oh, wow.
So he's the baby boy and I'm the baby girl.
Okay.
And he had went to the Army straight out of high school. And when he got out of the Army, he said he didn't want to go to college because he didn't know what he wanted to major in at that time. And I said to him, you know, Omar, you know, if I look back over the twists and turns that my career had taken, it makes total sense where I am now. You know, I can totally connect the dots looking in reverse. But back then, I could have never have charted, you know, how, you know, going left is going to, you know, open up this door. And then when I walk through that door, this other opportunity or this other thing is going to pique my interest. And that's going to lead to something else. But everything looking back set me up for the next thing. So for me, computer science was mandated. My mom, she told me, listen, you're going to major in a science or you're going to come home and you're going to go to Cleveland State. Which one?
Oh, and wow. So, okay.
Yeah, you know, Black mothers, they're like, because I was majoring in English because I, like I said, I wanted to be a novelist. And my mother was like, how is that going to pay the bills? Like, you better major in a science to stop playing, because I was good at math and science. And so I said, okay, I'm going to major in computer science. But you know what that degree did for me? It taught me how to problem solve very analytically, you know, and very unemotionally, you know, and just approach problems from a very analytical standpoint. If I go left, what's going to happen? If I go right, what's going to happen? If I go forward, what's going to happen? If I don't move at all, what's going to happen? You know, if I take one step back, what's going to happen? And I think that in my career as a producer and just in life in general, it really helps to be able to look at problems with more of a rational type of viewpoint. And then, you know, layer on all those other things, like our emotions and our sense of the world and our sense of identity and all of that kind of stuff. But computer science really helped me.
I love that. I love that. And then you did business. Did you do an MBA?
I did. I did an MBA. So basically, I went to LA. And I said, let me get on a set. If I'm going to be a screenwriter, let me figure out how to make movies, because I have no idea how to make movies. So I need to figure out how movies are made so that I can write something that somebody actually wants to make. So I answered an ad for a production assistant. And of course, they emailed me back right away because that's free labor. And
Right.
They gave me an address for a house in Crenshaw, like off of Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'd never been to Los Angeles. I knew really nothing about it. And so I'm like, oh my God, Crenshaw. My only frame of reference really is Boys in the Hood.
Right, right.
And I'm
right.
like, I'm going to get like the Crips and the Bloods and they're going right. to jack my car. And I'm going to be like, you know, so I was petrified driving over to this address. But I said, I got to do it for my art. And, you know, I was gripping the steering wheel so like tight, my knuckles were turning white. And I just realized that, like, man, this neighborhood is nice. These homes are very big.
Okay. Got palm trees out front.
And so I get to the house and the door is wide open and I just follow the voices back to the kitchen. And there was a production meeting that was happening. And it was the director, the cinematographer, and an executive producer sitting around a table. And three men, and none of them looked at me. None of them even acknowledged. I'm sure I said hello. They didn't even bother to turn. And I just sat down at the table and started listening. And they're saying, yeah, we need this. We need that. Da-da-da-da. We need this. And they said, I need a script. We need a script supervisor. Somebody write that down. And I said, I can do that. And then all of a sudden, all these guys turned to me. They shut up and they turned to me and they said, you could do that? I was like, sure. Now, I didn't know what a script supervisor was. I told you I never made a movie before.
I know. I was like, wait a minute. You went from PA to script supervisor. I love it.
And it shows the nature of that production, that somebody could walk off the street, get a job as a script supervisor. But I actually started producing that film for them. And it was in conjunction with another woman who was actually also an actress on the film, but she knew how to make movies and she was a producer, but she was acting in the film. So it was only so much she could do. Mm. And so she and I kind of teamed up. And it's, for me, it was just common sense. Like, you know, you have to tell people what time they need to be there. You have to have food for people. You have to have a shelter. You know, create an environment in which people can do their best work. And that really launched my producing career. Cause from there I produced another film and another film and another film, but I never took my eye off the goal of screenwriting. And after a few years, I got an opportunity to produce a film that I had written. And so that was the first screenplay that I had that was optioned. This is Haria Muhammad and you're listening to Sister Brunch.
Sisters and siblings, thank you so much for listening to Sister Brunch, where we champion the triumphs of Black women and gender expansive people in entertainment and media. Let's pick up where we left off with our remarkable guest and the powerhouse, Haria Muhammad. And just before we do that, though, we do ask you, our dear listeners, to share the love. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us your favorite brunch items by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell us about that project.
Well, listen, I think that I said to myself at that time, I'm going to become a producer because producing, I want to be at the top of the totem pole. You know, I want to be the one hiring and giving jobs. Mm. And I don't ever want to have to wait for someone to give me a job. I want to be at the top of the industry. Mm. And what I didn't know at that time is independent producers are not at the top of the industry at all.
No. We like to think we do a lot. We do a whole lot, but we don't get to make the decisions, do we?
Yeah, I didn't know. But, you know, I think that this industry is a lot like, you know, I give the parable of like somebody, if you never seen or encountered an elephant before, and if someone blindfolds you and they ask you, you know, what is an elephant? And you're like, you have the tail and you're like, oh, well, an elephant is like this long, skinny thing with like some hair on it. And, or like somebody else has the ear and they're like, oh, it's an elephant is this big floppy thing. And it's like kind of like cartilage. It feels like cartilage and it's a little bit like velvety. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody else has the tusk, they're going to give a different answer for what an elephant was. And I didn't have the sis, because I had too much confidence at the time. You know, I thought I knew everything. So I understand, like, Haria, this is just one vantage point of the industry, but I don't take anything away from my journey because of the fact that I am now able to produce content and produce films, that allowed me to then, when I was ready, begin to produce the films that I had written and directed. And if I had not done it that way, then I would have been waiting for someone, looking for a producer. And it wouldn't have opened up all the wonderful opportunities that it's opened up, you know, like Sundance and working with Equa and so many other things.
Yes, I love it. I love it. So, okay, you mentioned Equa. I want to touch a little bit on the Black TV Film and Film Collective, because at what point did you start to both understand yourself as a producer, but also step into this leadership role of founding something that was going to, you know, help so many Black folks who are in the industry?
Yeah. So in, you know, 2008, that's when the market crashed, the housing market crashed. The housing market crashed.
It sounds right.
Something happened.
Some miserable time. Yeah. I think the previous WGA strike, it was like there was all kinds of stuff happening.
It was all kind of craziness. And and no one was investing in independent films at that time. So, and also my mom was sick at that time. So I wanted to come back to the East Coast and take care of my mom. And so I did that for 2 years. And then my mom passed away. And I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back to LA? Am I going to stay here on the East Coast? And I was like, you know, I really kind of want to go to school again. And I never thought I would ever say that, because when I got out of Spelman, when I graduated, I said, I'm never going back to school again. That's it for me and formal education. But I was thirsty, you know, for that type of environment again. And it felt safe at that time, where it kind of felt like a little bit of the wind had gone from my sails. And I was grieving a lot, you know, and I wanted to be also on the East Coast, because that's where my family was and that's where my best friend was. So I decided to go, and that's when I got, and NYU had a dual degree program. They have an MBA's MFA program. And I was like, okay, this sounds really cool. So, but the way it works is you have to be admitted both to the MFA as well as the MBA. And so I applied. Tisch didn't offer me any money. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to go to school to get an MFA and have
not in that expensive ass city.
But I was interested in the MBA, and they also offered me some money. So I was like, okay. So I got my MBA. And then while I was on the East Coast, I had never worked in this industry on the East Coast before. And I really love, like, just making films, you know. So I started producing shorts. And we're in LA, I was producing features. So if you look like at my IMDb, you'll see I went from producing features to producing a lot of shorts. And that's because I came to the East Coast while I was in school, and I started just meeting people who had scripts, who had a couple of dollars. And it was like a kind of like a side hustle for me while I was in school to produce these shorts on the side. And it was fun, you know, but the more I got entrenched in the filmmaking community here in New York, I started to just meet people who were attracted to the things that I knew. And I started doing like table reads, and I was going to events, and I would invite, you know, some of the Black artists that I was meeting to go to these events with me. And before you know it, like, we kind of started a meetup group, and we had so many people in the meetup group coming to our events that we would have a waiting list, and we would tell people, listen, if you don't show up, you're not going to be able to come to one of our events again for like 3 months. You're not going to be able to get on the RSVP list because people who could have come. And then we said to ourselves, you know what we're doing there? This really should be a nonprofit. And we said, okay, if we get to 1,000 members before the end of the year, we're going to start a nonprofit. And we got to like maybe 979 or 78 or something like that. And the next year, we formalized as the Black TV and Film Collective. Nice. And honestly, the Black TV and Film Collective is such a big part of my heart, because it is artists who are coming together and not relying on, you know, somebody to give us this or help us in this way, but we're just helping each other. We're saying, okay, show up. And if you keep showing up with your script, it's going to get better, because we're going to continue to table read it. We're going to continue to give you feedback on it. And when you're ready to shoot it, guess what? We're going to be invested in it, and we're going to help. So, you know, so many of my projects I could not have done were it not for the Black TV and Film Collective. And I know that there's so many other projects that would not have gotten done were it not for the Black TV and Film Collective. There's a woman named Christine Shaw. She's a cinematographer. And it's so amazing because I had lost track of her. And then I saw her on Instagram, and she actually is one of the sideline camera operators for the Boston Celtics. And I
Oh, see, that's the best. That's the best.
And there's so many stories of people who I remember, Sam Hicks, who now he owns, you know, a camera gear rental company in Los Angeles called Sam Shot It. And I remember when Sam was first starting out and was coming to our events, and he didn't even know how to write a script. You know, there's
I love it.
He's a big time producer. You know, like, it's just so many.
That's what led you to make the fellowship, it sounds like, too, which is like, and it's what we want to do at Sister Brunch. It's like, on one hand, we want to uplift the current work, right? Like, part of it is, this is somebody who's working right now. You should know them. You should know their work. You should support their work. But also, we started to realize, now that we've done, this is our fifth season, that we're also creating this archive. Because when we look at our guests from even from season one, who have gone on to do amazing things, it's like, yes, this is what this is about. So for that fellowship, can you share, what does the fellowship entail? How can folks get it? Yeah.
Oh, it's the Black Producers Fellowship. And I, you know, for me, it was basically, there's a lot of support out there. Well, when I say a lot, that's not true. There is some support out there for directors, and there's some support out there for writers, but there's very little support out there for Black producers. And and myself, having walked the road of the independent producer, I know how hard it is to find support for our work and to find community. So that's really what led me to say, we need a Black Producers Fellowship.
Hey, it's Fanchon, and we are so grateful to you for tuning in. We're taking a quick break here, but don't go anywhere, because we would love it while we're on pause if you would head over to Instagram and follow us at Sister Brunch Podcast. We also post our clips on TikTok, on Trujulo's TikTok. So that's at Trujulo Media, T-R-U-J-U-L-O Media. You can also find us at that same profile on our YouTube channel, Trujulo Media.
Honestly, I say, if you're out there, you know, join the Black TV and Film Collective and just listen for updates on when the fellowship is opening back up. You know, our fellows, you know, the first year, our cohort, there was Pens and Pencils, and that went on to win a NAACP, was nominated for an NAACP award, or either won an NAACP award. There's so many others, you know, the Mechanics Rose, that played at so many different film festivals. I'm having a mama moment. I have a 3-year-old, so sometimes it's hard for me to remember things. But
I mean, when you're a powerhouse, that happens. And I obviously, just knowing about you, knowing about all the work you do, you know, I'm just like, there's so much synergy. So obviously we're going to be in touch after this about all the things. So I would love to talk about your process of actually producing something, because our listeners, a lot of our listeners, are curious about the film industry and not necessarily in it. And then we've got, you know, plenty of folks who do know, but maybe they're executives or maybe they're cinematographers, and they also don't necessarily know the process. So maybe we could take Farewell and More as an example, or if you have something you're working on now that you want to share, but kind of walking us through that process of, either you find something you love and you want to produce it, or someone comes to you as a producer. Could you give us kind of like the quick version of what that looks like, from soup to nuts, as they say, like all the way through distribution?
Yeah, sure. You know, like with Farewell and More, I was lucky because I found somebody that I love, which was Ekwa Masangi. And she and I had been working together for a couple of years, and she told me the story about her aunt and her uncle, who were separated for over 20 years, and how they managed to stay married and also raise a son, you know, across oceans, and, you know, build a house back in Kenya while her uncle was here in the U.S., and how her aunt and her uncle, you know, still held out hope that they would be united, you know, reunited again as husband and wife and as a family one day, you know, and that God was just, you know, this was their test here on this earth. And I was like, that's really interesting, Equa. You should write about that. And so she did. She started writing about it. And, you know, the producing process starts with something like that. It starts with finding some intellectual IP, in other words, a story that you really like are just captivated by, and something that just like, it's like a something you don't want to let go of, you know, because it's so hard in anything made or to make anything. So it has to be a story and also people that you really want to go through the fire with, you know, and that, you know, no matter how many years it's going to take you to make it, because it took us 5 years to make Farewell or More, maybe even six when we started from that point. And so Equa, you know, she started working on the script. And at the same time, I started finding us development funds for the film and, you know, trying to pad the coffers in terms of funding. And we got a grant called the Jerome Foundation grant, which was our first money in for the film. And after that, that kind of made it real. Like, okay, because the Jerome Foundation grant was like a $30,000 grant. And so we said, okay, this is a nice piece of change. So let's keep going. This is something. And then after that, we got NISCA, which was probably like $25,000. And we started applying for fellowships and labs. And thereafter, I got the Sundance Producing Fellowship, which more than a grant, it came with mentorship. And also really, before that, we got the first thing we got was the Tribeca Institute grant.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing about it is the grants, the fellowships and the labs, they all kind of track each other's projects. So once we got Tribeca, that put us on the radar for Sundance. And Sundance started like really like paying attention to us. And I remember at Tribeca, they have like a kind of like these industry meetings. And we met with the woman who runs the Sundance Screenwriting Lab. And the first thing she asked us, and she only asked us one question. She said, and everybody else that we met that day had asked us, like, how much is it going to cost? What's your timeline? What's this? What's that? And she sat down at the table and she said, how's it going to make me feel? And shishy foo foo Sundance people.
What you mean?
Talking about, you know? And,
that's what it's about, isn't it? Wow.
That's what it's about. That's why we make. That's why we make movies to feel something and people. Yes. And that's why we don't turn away, because we feel something, you know. Yes. And so the question was spot on, and so I'm so grateful that we got into the lab, and that because we learned so much going through the Sundance Producing Lab, and it introduced us to the industry in a way that was just amazing for us and our project. And similarly, we workshopped the films through not only Sundance, but also through so many other labs that we got into. And we went through like maybe 17 versions of the script. And that's what producing is. Producing is finding collaborators, finding people who believe in your film, going out there, finding people who will advocate on your behalf, you know, and introduce you and get you into rooms that you can't get in yourself, you know? And so, especially independent producing, and that's what it was like. And simultaneously, I knew that we were going to shoot the film in my neighborhood. So I, you know, I'm a big people person. So, you know, as Equa was writing the film, I was thinking about locations in my neighborhood and, you know, befriending and or further, you know, developing the relationships of like entrepreneurs and folks who own the shops, like the shop and, you know, the local theater and this and that, places that I knew we would need for locations. And so I probably like soft prep that film for about a year before we shot it, so that once we finally had the money, we could just kind of hit the ground running. And producing is that's what it is. It's about like those small steps that you take and you just keep going. You know, so many times people are going to ghost you. Funders are going to ghost you. They're going to meet you and they're going to say, oh, I'm so excited about this. This sounds so interesting. Send me the information. Send me your deck. Send me your material. Send me your script. And then you'll never hear from them again after you send it. But you just got to keep going, you know?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh my goodness, you're a perfect guest. So we're gonna close this out because you're a mama and you continue to be a powerhouse, and we want to let you get some rest and joy and all those things in between all the work you do. So we have our final signature Sister Brunch question, which is that you and young Haria are sitting down to a Sister Brunch. What are you both eating? What are you both drinking? And what do you tell her?
I think we're having a tea party. Yeah.
Probably lovely.
With some apple juice and some graham crackers. Just something like that.
Sweet.
And I'm going to tell her, like, you know, don't worry so much. Things are going to happen for you and because of you. And it's all going to work itself out. And don't worry so much. And try to have fun along the way.
Sweet. Haria Muhammad, thank you so much. Thank you for being here and for all that you do for the filmmaking community and for all of the stories that I know you will continue to help birth into the world that really matter. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. And I hope that I said something that somebody, it resonated for someone and it helped someone along the way.
A big, big thank you to our listeners for subscribing, for sharing your reviews, for sharing the shows with your friends and family and colleagues and community, and for lifting up our guests and their projects, most importantly, for all the ways as well that you share your stories with the world. You can read the transcripts of every single episode and find show notes on our website, sisterbrunch.com. You can also sign up for our newsletter on the website. Season 5 of Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions. Our show creators are Anya Adams, Christabel Nciabwadi, Brittany Turner, and me, Fanchon Cox. Sister Brunch is a Women Make Movies Production Assistance Program project. We acknowledge that the land we record our podcast on is the original land of the Tongva and the Chumash people. We cannot wait to see you next time. Take care, everybody.